And joining us on Perspectives today is Dale Brown. Dale is a retired captain of the U.S. Air Force. He's also the writer of the recent novel Iron Wolf, and this is also in conjunction with the anniversary of the United States Air Force. And a lot of you may be familiar with Dale from his past books. 1987 is, I remember reading, not that year, but I remember reading The Flight of the Old Dog, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. But first of all, we want to thank you, Dale, for joining us and also for serving our country. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for that. I really appreciate that.
Now, let's talk a little bit about your background. Obviously, as I mentioned, you are retired from the U.S. Air Force. You were captain. But tell us a little bit about when you were young, were you always fascinated by military? You know, I know a lot of us played soldiers. I don't know if everybody plays on the screen now, not like when I was a kid where we had little soldiers and we would build things in the backyard and blow them up and stuff. But what about you?
I'm not sure if I was really that much into the military. I know I was into writing and flying when I was a kid. My dad used to take us out to a Buffalo International Airport, and this is before a lot of security at the airports, and you could practically drive right up to the runway. And he used to park the car right at the approach end of the runway, and we would watch the airliners come overhead. And I was just fascinated by that. Really wanted to fly as soon as I could. I didn't get my license until many years after that, but I've always been fascinated with writing. I think I first got interested in the military, especially the U.S. Air Force, during career days at high school, where the recruiters would come into the high school and they'd show films and talk about life in the Air Force, and I was really fascinated with that, especially with the B-52 bombers. Those huge multi-engine aircraft that really fascinated me. So that's what I chose once I got into the Air Force and graduated from Navigator School. But I always wanted to be a writer also, and I wrote for the high school newspaper. I had a column for a few years at the Penn State University newspaper. I did freelancing for many years. Wrote for a computer magazines. Did reviews on software and things like that, and always thought I would get into writing as a magazine or newspaper writer. Never really thought I'd get into fiction until the things I did in the Air Force and the Cold War situations we found ourselves in really got my attention going. We couldn't talk about the things we were doing in the Air Force, things we were doing with the B-52s, but I wanted to tell the story. Nobody knew what we did with the B-52s. We'd take off in the middle of the night, and we'd be gone for 12 hours, 14 hours, and nobody knew where we went or what we were doing. And I really wanted to tell that story, so I started to get into fiction writing, and that's how Flight of the Old Dog came about. I wanted to tell what the B-52s did and what we could do, and of course, like all first novels, that your first novel is a fantasy autobiography, and I wanted the B-52 navigator to be the hero and accomplish the mission and save his crew and get the girl at the end.
And did you get the girl at the end?
Absolutely.
Great. Good. And, you know, I want to say thank you also to your family, because as you mentioned, a lot of people don't realize that while the man or the woman is serving their country, the family stays here and they sacrifice a lot, especially, as you mentioned, if you're gone or your wife is gone for 12 hours and they don't know where you are.
That's exactly right. You can't talk about it. You can say, well, we have a mission, and they know they assume that it's just an exercise or it's a practice. But you really can't talk about what you do, and you certainly can't. When I pulled alert, we did during the Cold War, during the height of the Cold War, you sat alert. That's mostly what we did with the B-52s and the FB-111 bombers. Our job was to get ready for World War III. So we would load the aircraft up with nuclear weapons and nuclear missiles and fuel and put them out there on alert, and we were standing by ready to respond to when they set the klaxon off. We would respond to the aircraft and get ready to copy down the coded message and respond to whatever the message told us to do. So we certainly couldn't talk about that. And so I really wanted an outlet to express myself about what we were doing and what we could be doing if things in the world turned out bad. So I really wanted to tell the story. Now I had to stay away from the classified stuff, so I never described a nuclear war or our preparations to do that. But I really wanted to tell the story of the bomber guys, the guys who pulled alert and got ready to go and were ready to fight and just were hoping they didn't have to do that, but we're getting ready to do it nonetheless.
Tell me, Dale, as a navigator and as a pilot, have you ever put yourself, especially this last year when we were remembering the 50th anniversary of the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, have you ever put yourself in the navigator or the pilot's shoes and wondering what would you do or how would you feel if you were in that position?
Absolutely. I do. I try to do that in just about every novel where you're sent on an extremely important mission, probably classified, secret mission to take out a specific target or to prevent the war from escalating. You have to take out a certain target, command post, communication center, and I try to put my readers in the cockpit in each and every book. I get technical sometimes because I think that's part of the story that I want to tell. It's not just the heroic pilot taking control of the airplane and flying supersonic and shooting down the bad guys, but there's a lot of kind of mundane stuff, a lot of checklists, a lot of switches, a lot of studying radar scopes and things like that. But that's all part of the battle. That's all part of the story. So I put it all in my books, and I try to put the reader in the middle of the action, not just with the stick and throttles, but with all the switches and all the other things you need to do to launch a missile or drop a bomb. So I try to put my readers in the thick of it right from the very first page.
And you do a very good job of it.
Well, thank you, sir.
We're speaking with New York Times bestselling author Dale Brown. Dale's latest novel is Iron Wolf. And one of the things that I wanted to share with our listeners also is at the beginning of the book, many authors dedicate their books. And Dale does the same thing in this one, but it really caught my eye because I want to read this to you all. This novel is dedicated to all who rise up against tyranny, intimidation, and aggression, not just in Eastern Europe, but around the world. The violence we are seeing in 2015 rivals anything we have seen since the end of the Cold War, and the world needs leaders who have the strength, courage, and vision to lead others to engage and defeat the aggressors. Whether it is by massive armies or navies, by small teams of special operation forces, or by an entirely new class of high-tech weapons and tactics, free nations and those praying for freedom need a leader to devise a plan, lead warriors into battle, and get the job done. That's very... it's hard to describe that dedication, but it really gets you to think about exactly what we're going through and what we may be facing.
Well, I think a lot of these conflicts that we're seeing, whether it be Russia or if it's ISIS or Al Qaeda, they flourish because there's very little leadership going on out there right now. There's a lot of people kind of rattling sabers, and there's the countries that seem to be more successful or more protractive, such as Russia, such as ISIS, leadership in ISIS. They're being successful because they have strong leaders who aren't afraid to pick a fight and to press forward with their objectives. When you have NATO, when you have countries in the Middle East who aren't willing to step forward and take a leadership position, they fail, and nothing gets done. When you see a country suddenly, seems like out of nowhere, Saudi Arabia starts counterattacking when they finally got tired of having insurgents on their southern border from Yemen crossing the border, they stepped up and they started air attacks against the other rebels in Yemen. So someone has to step forward to lead the free people of the world. And in the past, in the recent past, it's been the United States. But for some reason, our leadership doesn't seem to be willing to take a leadership position. They want to step back in the background. They want either no fight, no response, or someone else to take over. And you know, I think that's wrong. And I think the United States needs to present a leader and step forward and be willing to take charge. And until we see that, I think we're going to see more adversaries like ISIS, like Russia, like Vladimir Putin, like China building their own islands in the South China Sea. We're going to see more and more and more of that. And it's frustrating to me because my solution is step forward, take charge, be a leader, and the world will follow you. Free people of the world will follow you if you do that.
And one of the things that Dale, you, and especially you as a former officer in the United States Air Force, you look at some of these leaders or also wannabe leaders like in North Korea, and you're wondering if this guy is just, you know, he looks like a kid, and you're wondering if he's just kind of playing around and seeing what buttons he can push and see what this does and see what that does.
Yeah, exactly. It's I don't see any leadership with him. I think he's fairly new at the job. I'm not sure if he really wanted it. I think it was sort of handed over to him. I think there's a lot of forces in the background that he has to deal with. Whether or not he deals with it harshly or politically, I'm not exactly sure. But the military in a place like North Korea is a very strong influence on all aspects of society and on government. And so I think that's a huge dynamic. And I think I certainly don't think that he's crazy. The leadership, the military, they're not crazy. They're very wily. They're doing what they do for a reason, because the West, the United States, the other countries in Asia are falling for it. You know, they're letting themselves get intimidated by moves made by North Korea. And until we stop letting that happen and we start dealing with North Korea as the irritating adversary they are, we're going to continue to be cowed by them. And that really has to stop. That, you know, I don't see that as leadership. Although I think that the military leaders in North Korea are getting ready. They're sort of hampered a little bit by the civilian leadership, but at the same time that they're walking a very fine line, a very very tight line with being overrun, losing all their support from countries like China, and the country is so poor anyway that they really have very little room to maneuver. And if they thought that they were under serious threat from the West or from the United States or other countries in Asia, they could very easily strike out.
We are visiting with New York Times bestselling author Dale Brown. Dale is also a retired officer from the United States Air Force. The latest novel is Iron Wolf. Now, as you just mentioned, what may happen in Korea and what's going on there, what about the nuclear deal with Iran? How does that strike you? And as far as you as a former officer and as a author of techno thrillers, and you have been on TV before, right, as an advisor and expert with some of the channels?
Oh, yeah, very much so.
Uh-huh.
I think the Iran deal is a very bad deal for the United States and for the entire region. And I think we will see a nuclear escalation in the Middle East, where other countries are fearful of what Iran could do and start building up their own nuclear forces. And I think it's unfortunate. I think President Obama wants to have a foreign policy victory, and he's he sees this deal with Iran something to prop up his legacy in foreign affairs, and he might be successful in temporarily stopping Iran's nuclear weapon program, but Iran will continue to build up their nuclear program overall, and we really don't know exactly what their nuclear weapon program is. If they do things like start self-inspecting themselves, like the Parchin laboratory, then they could very, very easily have a nuclear weapon far, far more quickly than the one-year breakout period that the treaty supposedly gives us right now. So I think it's a bad deal. I think the sanctions should have been kept in place. I don't believe that war, if we didn't have the treaty, then war is inevitable. I think we could have put the sanctions back in place and put the pressure back on the leadership in Tehran. But that pressure is going to go away. They're going to have their frozen funds back, and now they have the money and actually more importantly, the prestige of putting one over on the West. And so I think they're going to be more dangerous, and I think that's going to make the situation in the Middle East a lot more dangerous.
I don't want to stray away from the novel that you just wrote, but I'm taking advantage of speaking to an expert here so that we can share your expertise also with our listener. What about the Cuban sanctions? Because it seems like everything that was set up for the Cold War has kind of been taken away.
Yeah, I think Cuba is a very interesting dynamic. It's I'm not sure if we needed to do something with Cuba. I would have liked to see the Cuban people and the Cuban government do something more to get themselves back on the world stage, to join the neighborhood of nations. But I think we needed to reestablish ties with Cuba. They're our neighbor. They're right there. But I don't think they've done enough. We've given them a lot of stuff. Again, we've given them the prestige of being recognized by the United States again. But they haven't really changed anything about their government, the treatment of their people, their economy. Mostly based with the not just the government, but with the leadership of the government. They really haven't changed their stripes that much, and I think we could have gotten more from them. And it just seems like we're not willing to bargain or negotiate with anybody. We turned our back on Iran or on Iraq. We're willing to negotiate with Iran, without really getting anything in return except for possibly a delay in their nuclear weapons program. We're willing to reestablish diplomatic ties with Cuba, but we really didn't get anything in return for that. So we don't seem to be willing to bargain with people. We're willing to give them things. We gave away our ballistic missile shield in Europe just because Russia indicated that they were upset with that. If we really didn't get anything in return for taking down the Patriot and the long range ballistic missile defenses that we had planned for Europe, we simply did away with them. We took them back. We said we weren't going to build anything in Poland, and we really didn't get anything in return for that gesture. So we seem to be too willing to give away stuff and not willing to demand anything in return. So I think that again shows where our leadership is heading, and the real necessity that we need to have stronger leadership in this country that's willing not just to have a leadership position in this country, but take a leadership position in the entire free world. And I think the current leadership thinks that's an old tired phrase that shouldn't be used anymore. The leader of the free world, he's not willing to accept that mantle. And I think that's unfortunate. We're suffering because of it.
We're visiting with New York Times bestselling author Dale Brown. Dale is the current, the author of the current novel, Iron Wolf. And Speaking of leadership, Dale, in your novel, you have a female president, and you're talking about 2017.
Yes.
Would you like to kind of tell us a little bit about that? I don't want to give away the story, but...
Yeah, Stacey Ann Barbeau, I've used her in several novels in the past. She's a favorite character. The readers really like her. She's a tough cookie. She's demanding. She's not afraid to go and cross lines to get what she wants. And she really stepped forward in the novel Starfire, where she's running for president, but she's not afraid to rock the boat. And readers really responded to that. So I think she was a natural choice to be president. It had nothing to do with any candidates that are running now, but she seemed to be the perfect choice for the next president. The previous president that I had was Ken Phoenix was kind of weak. Things were happening, especially with China and with Russia, and he wasn't willing to respond to it. And he had a lot of disasters happen on his watch that he could have prevented if he had stepped forward and been a little bit more aggressive. So I had the leadership change. Stacey Ann seemed like the perfect choice to take over for Ken Phoenix, and Stacey is very pro-military, but she's untested in foreign affairs. She's untested with dealing with dynamic leaders in Russia and China, and that's going to show in the story. So it's I don't want to give away too much either, but she's a new president. It's just at the very beginning of her administration, and things are happening in Eastern Europe that she doesn't completely understand and is not really equipped to respond to it, and so she doesn't. And that's what I think could happen in the same time frame in the real world if we don't have a leader who's willing to respond to threats and provocations and outright attacks in Eastern Europe. I think that's a threat to the NATO alliance. I don't think a lot of the candidates, especially on the Democratic side, really believe that much in NATO. So we've already seen a weakening in NATO, and it seems like the current leadership is more than happy to have that continue. That NATO is breaking down. A lot of the NATO countries are too dependent on Russia for export markets and for natural gas and things like that. So the breakdown of the alliance continues. And if there was an overt attack on a peripheral NATO nation, maybe not Germany or England or France, but the countries that very few Americans, frankly, have heard about, even Poland. The common question is, what exactly do we care about Poland or Latvia or Estonia? And some of those countries, especially in the Baltic states, have very substantial Russian-speaking populations. Latvia is 40% Russian-speaking. So if Russia tried to do the same tactic that they did in eastern Ukraine by saying that the Russian-speaking people were not being represented, they were being persecuted, they could easily do the same thing in a NATO ally like Latvia. And if we let them do it in Ukraine, there's really no reason why Vladimir Putin couldn't think that he could do it in a NATO nation. If NATO is too dependent on Russia, if the Russian military is more modern and much larger than the NATO forces, then maybe he thinks he can get away with it. And that's a very real possibility, and that's what I describe in Iron Wolf.
We are visiting with New York Times bestselling author Dale Brown, the author of the latest novel, Iron Wolf. Dale, we have about probably 2.5 minutes left, but one of the things that I wanted to bring up is that you've been described as you and Tom Clancy is creating a new genre called techno thrillers.
Yes, it's I admit it to everybody. I'm a real techie. You know, I like new technology, whether it be civilian or military stuff. And it's I'm not afraid to tell my readers and show my readers exactly how much I love this stuff. It's fascinating for me. I like doing research and looking into the future to find out what's coming next, and then taking conflicts that are happening right now that people read about or see on the news, and then taking some of this high tech stuff that's just coming off the drawing boards or maybe just being designed or imagined, but applying that new technology to what's happening in the world right now. And that's my definition of a techno thriller. I get into a technology, I get into a geopolitics, and I try to mesh both sides of that into a story, and try to bring the readers along for a roller coaster ride. Try to plug them in, you know, introduce the readers first of all to the real world technology and how that might not be adequate for future conflicts, and then take some of this newer technology and show how that might be the deciding factor in what happens. So it's a blast for me. I've been doing it for so long, and I'm going to continue to do it. Technology is making these huge advances, and it's very exciting to see the new stuff coming over the horizon and marrying that stuff up with current conflicts or possible conflicts is really exciting to me. I just hope that excitement makes it on the pages. That's what I'm going to do, and I have no intention of retiring or stopping doing it.
We've been visiting with New York Times bestselling author Dale Brown. Dale is the author of the current novel, Iron Wolf. Dale, if there's something that perhaps piqued our listeners' interest, and you know, you talked a lot about the history of America, Cold War, and other things that we've been going through. But if they want to find out more, do you have a website that they can go to?
I sure do. It's www.airbattleforce.com, and that's I update that all the time. I'm also on Facebook and Twitter as author Dale Brown, and I do Facebook and Twitter quite a bit. But the website's a great place to start, and it's. I have a blast doing that also.
What is the name of the website again, please?
It's www.airbattleforce.com.
Well, thank you very much for being with us. And again, thank you for your service. We've been visiting with New York Times bestselling author Dale Brown, author of the current novel Iron Wolf. I want to remind you that the comments expressed during this program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of KTEP. Dale, thank you very much for being with us here.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.